You're listening to Clean Beauty Scene, episode 67. Forget about stress management. Here's what to do instead with Dr. Delia McKay.
Welcome to Clean Beauty Scene, the podcast for clean beauty, eco-friendly living, and wellness. I'm your host, Kelly Bonanno, eco-wellness coach and mom to two teenage boys. If you want a green beauty routine but find clean beauty and eco-living overwhelming and confusing, I get it. I've been there. So join me each week as we clear the confusion and cover all the latest to help you go green without giving up glamour or going eco-freako. Now talk clean to me, baby.
Hello, savvy beauties. Welcome to Clean Beauty Scene. I'm Kelly Bonanno, your host, eco-lifestyle and wellness coach. Oh, do I have a delight for you today. My guest is so knowledgeable, and the topic we are going to talk about is really going to speak to you, especially if you are a woman. But before we get to that, I wanted to remind you a couple of things. I have openings for one-on-one clients. So if you would like to book a consultation, a free clarity call, definitely get in on my calendar. I'll put the link in the show notes, you know, and we're going to put links to my guest too. If you want to get in touch with her, I'm sure you'll be enthralled by what she talks about. So all the links will be in the show notes. And my guest today also is going to be a guest on my summit, my health summit.
Lose 10 pounds by summer. It's virtual, so it's online. You can watch from the comfort of your own home, and it is completely free. I have 20 amazing speakers. We are focusing on, yes, helping you lose weight, but also lose it permanently. To keep it off. We are going to give you tools, tips, and strategies and methods to lose the weight. But this is not about quick fixes and fads. It is to help you have a healthy relationship with food and to create a lifestyle, because if you've listened to this podcast or you have been in my community, you know I'm on a mission to help you women break free from dieting. I don't believe being on or off a diet. There is no good or bad food. There are so many things that you can be doing to enjoy food, enjoy your life, and still be a weight that you want and be comfortable and fit into the clothes that you want to wear. This is what I hear from a lot of women. So I have created this summit to do exactly that. So if you have, you know, been on the diet roller coaster and lost and gained the same 10, 15 or more pounds year after year, or, you know, you gained some weight from the pandemic, or you're having these perimenopausal and menopausal weight gain and weight loss resistance, this summit is going to help you tremendously. I am so excited. I'm humbled by the amazing speakers we have. And each topic is just so, so helpful and really going to help you, because there's so much that goes into losing weight. It's so not about calories in, calories out. And yes, food and nutrition and what we're eating and how much we're eating and when we're eating plays a role. And there's so many things that have nothing to do with food that are causing your weight gain, your weight loss resistance. So you are going to learn all about that. So the link will be in the show notes. It's kellybonanno.com/summit. My last name is a little tricky to spell, B-O-N-A-N-N-O. So kellybonanno.com/summit. But of course, go to the link in the show notes and it'll take you right there so you can sign up. So excited, and I hope to see you there.
Definitely sign up and join us. And now I'm excited to introduce you to Delia McCabe. Delia McCabe shifted her research focus from clinical psychology to nutritional neuroscience upon discovering nutrition's critical role in mental well-being while completing her master's. Delia's research into female stress has been published in a number of peer-reviewed journals. She is a regular featured expert in the media, and her two internationally available books are available in 4 different languages. And using her background in psychology, combined with evidence-based nutritional neuroscience and neurological perspectives, Delia supports behavior change and stress resiliency within corporates and for individuals who want to optimize their brain health via online courses, workshops, and tailored events internationally. Welcome, Delia. Welcome to Clean Beauty Scene.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Kelly. I'm honored to be here.
Well, you and I had such a great discussion a couple months ago. Right when we talked and we met, I thought, oh, I cannot wait to have her on the show. And I'm also very excited that you're going to be on the Health Summit as well. So I would love for you to share with listeners, you know, you had this light bulb moment, you know, in your in your journey. What was that that led you away from psychology? You know, that was sort of your calling for a long time, right? And then kind of you veered down a different path to nutritional neuroscience, which I think is fascinating.
It was really a light bulb moment. And, you know, sometimes when you're living through something, it doesn't make any sense. And I'm sure many of your listeners have experienced that, where you're living through it and you're going, what on earth is going on? But when you look back, you go, wow. So for me, when I look back, I realized that that was really a fork in the road moment for me, because I was working with school children who were really smart, but were doing really poorly at school. And I was looking at the psychological variables that underpinned that underachievement. So as fate would have it, I had a little bit of extra space on one of the questionnaires that I developed for these children. And I thought, let's just ask them what they love eating. It was a weird question, but not really weird in context of my life at the moment, because my husband had just invested in a chain of health food stores. And I was really curious about food and its impact on our body and so on. And I thought, let's just throw that question in. So it was in context of my current life, but not in context of my psychological background or my, you know, my research background. And every single one of the children in my experimental group, that's the children who were really smart but doing poorly, loved junk food. And every single children in my control group, that's the group of children who were doing well, didn't love junk food. And it's very seldom in research that you get such a clear distinction. And another way that fate stepped in was that I was very, very pregnant at the time with my first child. And I thought, look, I'm going to take a little bit of time out. I'll obviously, you know, submit my master's and do everything that I plan to do. But let's just take a little time out and check this out. You know, does the food that these children eat affect their mental well-being and their capacity to learn and focus and do well at school? And the rest, as they say, is history, because when I had handed my master's in and got my degree, I had by that time discovered that there was a huge field of research that wasn't well known outside the fields of you know, academia, that was investigating this exact topic. How does what we eat impact the brain? And look, this was 25 years ago, so I'm aging myself now, but it was really the light bulb moment. I thought, how can I try and talk people better when I understand that their challenge may be deeper at the actual cellular neuronal level? And that's where I veered away from psychology and went to really just become an investigator into this field. And it was very hard to find the people who were investigating this, because they weren't, you know, popular like they are today. And you know,
right, back then, which is not that long ago, but yeah, people were not talking about the connection. Yeah,
they absolutely weren't. And I think the part of the challenge was because it was really hard to find the information firstly, and then to disseminate it, because all the words that were used were very complex. And it's now changed, thank goodness. So we can easily have this discussion because it's much more common knowledge now. And also we've made it easier for people to understand.
Yes, yes. But there is such a connection that, I mean, with what we eat to every part of our body and definitely our brain. And I, you know, I recently have read a couple articles that a lot more therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists are starting to work with health coaches, because they are now starting to, I mean, probably still a small percentage, but starting to realize the true connection between your mental health and your physical health and what you're eating. And it's true. It's like, rather than putting a Band-Aid on or some medication, or it's like, let's look at all the things, like all the basic things, your nutrition, your water, your sleep, because if you're not doing all those, yes, your mental health is going to be whacked out. And, you know, especially I think everyone has really experienced that even more than ever now with this pandemic. It's people are really realizing that this has just jerked everyone's mental health around so badly.
Absolutely. And I think once people get that connection, they realize they've got a lot more power, which is why I'm really passionate about sharing this message. Because once you take that power back, you then use that knowledge to make yourself resilient against all the things that are going on around you. And that's why I also use my psychology. So for a long time, Kelly, I thought, oh, my psychology degree was such a waste of time. I kept on thinking, oh no. But now I understand that I put them together and I use them together. So it's much more powerful having that background, but knowing that the foundation relies on, you know, what we eat. I often say to people, if you're going to push a car with the tires flat, you're going to make your life so much harder. Just pump the tires and then you can push the car with ease. And that's what we do. We first deal with, you know, all the neurotransmitters, all the nutrients that are required to make the brain work really well. And then we give the strategies strategies that can be used on top of that to help someone live their best life.
Exactly. So what are some of the foundational foods for the brain? Like, people listening are probably going, okay, I do eat healthy. They're probably thinking two things. Oh, I need to eat better. Or, well, I eat healthy, but am I eating the right things? What are some things that listeners could go out and get at their health food store tomorrow or a regular grocery store?
One of the things that was also a light bulb moment for me was when I discovered that 60% of the dry weight of the brain is made up of fat. And I was really shocked at that. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of fat. And I'd better find out about this fat if I want to understand the brain more. And I started a journey, which in all honesty, 25 years later, I'm still on, because it's the most complicated aspect of nutrition, fats and oils. My normal lecture takes 3.5 hours. So that's just to give you an idea of how complicated it is. But I sat down and I said, okay, let's break it down into categories and let's see which of the categories are most important for brain function. And one of the fats that 95% of people are deficient in is omega-3, which is a polyunsaturated fat. And it's called an essential fat because our body cannot make it. We have to get it from our diet. And a lot of people are not getting it from their diet because food manufacturers don't like omega-3 fats because they go rancid very quickly, Kelly. And so they lose money when they use these fats in food. And so you don't find them on the shelf in the supermarket because they get damaged really quickly. And then they're not shelf stable and no manufacturer likes that. So 95% of people are deficient in that fat. The other challenge is the omega-6 fat is a fat that the media has said is a terrible fat because it increases inflammation. But actually, it's also critically important for the brain if it's in the right ratio. Now, just a little tip for everybody that wants to have beautiful skin. And I know that many of the listeners do want to have beautiful skin. Everybody wants beautiful skin. Yeah. When I discovered this, I was like, wow, that's amazing. Because there's a certain kind of fat called gamma linolenic acid, which we find in evening primrose oil. And it's an omega-6 fat, but it's got a fantastic property. It stops transepidermal water loss. So when people look at their beauty products, the first item they'll find on that beauty product is aqua, which is basically water. So one of the things that these manufacturers know, they know that the body actually loses a lot of water just generally with our day-to-day living. And so they put a lot of water in their products with a lot of other bad stuff, if you don't know. But if you're a listener to Kelly's show, then you'll know what the good ones are. They put a lot of other substances in to stop that water loss. Now, the thing with gamma linolenic acid, the magic of it is it stops that transepidermal water loss. So when your body has a lot of this wonderful fat in it, you're not only looking after your brain, but you're also looking after your skin. So I then, throughout this process of discovering what good foods were for the brain, discovered that the same foods are really good for our skin, because our skin is actually the most complex array of amino acids, that is proteins, in the whole body. Because the skin has to breathe, it's got to flex, it's got to stretch, it's got to do all these wonderful things, but that fat stops water loss. So when you use this fat, you're helping your brain and your skin. So that's the first thing that I think a lot of people aren't aware of, is how important fat is for the brain. Because without the right kinds of fat, the cell membranes or the neuronal membranes don't function optimally. Because the thing about the brain, it needs to be as flexible and malleable as possible. Because when it is, it can change shape very quickly. We take on new information. We embed information that is important in our memory systems. And we can then actually stretch our brain and just grow as people. But if we don't have the right kinds of fats, that's the omega-3 and the omega-6 fats, which interestingly, we need about 22% of that 60% to be made up of these essential fats. If we don't have them available in the cell membrane, then those cells actually battle to be flexible, to shift, to form new connections with other neurons, and to communicate optimally with each other. So when people talk about, you know, foggy brain, unable to remember, just poor mood, an inability to focus and concentrate, easily distracted, all of those things relate to the foundation, which is the fat. So this is something really, really important to keep in mind. And people can easily get enough of this fat if they simply go to the health store and find flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, and sunflower seeds. And the ratio is 2 cups of flax seeds to 1/3 of the cup of each of the others. And you put that in a glass jar, stick it in the freezer, and every day take out a few tablespoons, grind it up, and have it in your smoothie or on your salad. And that gives you a beautiful ratio of 2 to 1 in favor of omega-3, because omega-3 is used mostly in the brain, the heart, the adrenal glands, and the reproductive organs, which are the most biologically active organs. So when you make sure that you're doing that, you make sure that you're not one of those 95%.
That sounds good. Yeah, they're really good on salads and of course in smoothies. Yeah. And then there's salmon. Salmon's a good source of omega-3. If it's
challenge is and, absolutely yeah. If it's wild caught, Kelly, because the ones that are grown in food farms or in fish farms are actually really a challenge, not just for the environment, but for our health, because they are often fed specific compounds to give them that pink color.
Yeah.
Because the food that they fed doesn't naturally give them that pink, you know, the color right. of the flesh. So wild caught, absolutely wonderful brain food.
Yes. And it's so true. Fat is so important for the brain and the skin. You know, I call it beauty from the inside out. And
absolutely.
You know, this podcast is clean beauty scene. Like clean beauty is inside, outside, inside, it's health. It's not just the products you're using or the toxins you're avoiding. It's your food, your stress, your sleep, all of that. So I really love that. And I, you know, I'll say to my clients when we're working on the nutrition part of it, it's like, you know, healthy fats. It's the right kind of fats is what you need for the brain, but also for the weight loss and weight maintenance too. I always say like that whole non-fat, low-fat craze made us fat.
It did. Absolutely.
And gave us brain fog. And
it did. And it also put everyone in a bad mood. Everyone was just cranky.
Yeah.
I think, you know, part of the problem that I say to people, I say to them, the scientists actually used the wrong word when they used the word fats. They should have said lipids, because lipids are the biochemical name of these very important fats. But when they used the word fat, we just assumed fat on the body, fat on, you know, from food, it's all the same thing, but it's not. And that's why, as I said, it's the most complicated area of nutrition. Yeah. And so a lot of people are confused by that. But also, you know, the clean carbohydrates that we should be eating. And I often say to people, you know, a broccoli is carbohydrates.
Yes.
So if you want to avoid, you know, the starchy carbs, absolutely, when you're focusing on weight loss, but broccoli is carbs and the brain needs carbs. It's a preferred source of fuel for the brain. So lots and lots of colorful carbs gives us antioxidants for brain and skin health. And then of course we have protein. And I think one of the problems with protein, Kelly, and you obviously deal with this with your clients as well, is that a lot of people have been led to believe that only animal products contain protein, but this is not true.
No,
all plants and fruits contain protein as well. Not always in the same ratio, but they come with a whole lot of other things.
Yes.
So it is possible to have a really healthy diet if you're a vegan or you're a vegetarian, as long as you make sure that you've got specific nutrients that those diets can be low in.
Yes.
And that's things like B12 and iron and zinc, for example.
And it's so true. You really can get enough protein without eating animal products. And yeah, that's one of the things I give my clients is like a whole list of, because protein is so important. The protein fiber, like it's not about no carbs. It's exactly the right carbs. And it's not about no fat. It's the healthy fats. And I break down, like there's certain things, protein in like spinach. I mean, you'd be they're surprised to find out that there's protein in so many things you might not think. I mean, not a lot, but you have to, you know, but it adds up. It adds up. Absolutely. So, you know, we kind of touched on this in the beginning about females and how we deal. I mean, we have just different, we deal with things differently when it comes to, you know, biologically and mentally. And we also are dealing with, you know, we take on so much as women, we just do. And, you know, we're just always juggling and we're just always handling things. And I think that's one of the things I find with my clients and my community is just, they're overwhelmed, you know, and that adds even more stress. And we as women deal with stress and it affects us differently than men. And I think this is so fascinating. I think if women kind of understood that, they might look at it a little differently. And, you know, we need to help ourselves in a different way. So I would love to for you to talk on what the difference, you know, the male and female brain and how different it is, how we deal with stress differently and how we can, you know, I always say like stress perception, not stress reduction, because you can't always, I mean, where you can reduce, great, but you, there's so many things you can't reduce. So it's really about perceiving it and handling it and handling it in a healthy way, because stress is going to come at us no matter what.
Absolutely. We've created a very complex society for ourselves. Yeah. And so it's never going anywhere. I say that to people, you know, don't imagine ever that you're going to wake up one morning and all the stress is gone. We just need to, as you say, shift our perception about it. But I think what I really like sharing with women, especially, and also with men, wise men, because then they understand that they can treat their partners, their wives, their daughters, you know, the woman in their world in a different way, because we are different. Our brains are definitely different. So I like to share this information, because then women go, oh, I'm not alone. Other women feel the same way. And it makes us feel comforted. And that definitely helps, because we don't feel so alone then. And the first thing that you mentioned is that we have so much on our plates. We have a lot of overwhelm. And the technical term for that is psychosocial stress. Mm. So that is basically stress that comes from our environment, from the society and the world that we've created, you know, our immediate environment. And it also comes from our psychology, the way we perceive all the things we have to do, all that juggling that we think is now part and parcel of our life. So that's one huge stress that women have that men don't have, because we perceive the world differently and our role in the world differently. We do think that we should be doing it all. And that's partly because of our environment, but it's partly because of the media, and it's partly because of us now not just working in the home, but outside the home. We have this perception that everything is our responsibility. So that's a huge problem. So that's the first area where we are different to men in terms of our stress. It's actually the load of stress that we perceive we need to carry. The second area that we're different to men is related to our hormones. Now, most women will understand this intuitively. They'll know that there's a certain time of the month where they will feel a little bit more cranky. They'll crave chocolate a little bit more. They won't sleep as well. They'll maybe be a bit weepy. And then as they go into perimenopause and menopause, that also shifts. Now, why this happens is because estrogen and progesterone are fluctuating during the month, whereas testosterone doesn't fluctuate. It stays stable and then slowly tapers off over a 20-year period. But women are, from the time they go, you know, into becoming reproductively active, they immediately have these huge shifts in estrogen and progesterone. Now, estrogen and progesterone are linked to serotonin and GABA. And serotonin is a very important neurotransmitter that's involved in so many different functions. One researcher said it's the neurotransmitter involved in everything, but responsible for nothing. So that's one way of explaining how busy it is. And it's very much formed in the gut. And then we also have a different kind of serotonin, which is synthesized in the brain. So just think of estrogen fluctuating with serotonin every month. Now we have progesterone, which is fluctuating, and it fluctuates with GABA. And GABA is gamma aminobutyric acid. And it's also a very important neurotransmitter, because it helps us feel calm and relaxed and just helps us feel a little bit more centered and just level-headed.
Yeah.
So when estrogen and progesterone are fluctuating, so are these two neurotransmitters, and that's what impacts our brain. Now add to that the psychosocial stress that we have, you can see that at certain times of the month, when the serotonin and GABA is fluctuating, the environment and all the things that we're trying to juggle may just seem like too much. And so women can have mini meltdowns because of that. Then the third area where we're different is the way our brains are actually structured. Now, just before I speak about this, I need to say that the male and female brain are more similar than they are different, but the differences are very, very noticeable. So we all know what the differences are, and men will speak about them and women will speak about them. And mostly we laugh about them. Depending on the time of the month, we can take them quite personally. But generally, we understand that there are distinct differences. And that's because our limbic system, which, if you can think about this, is a part of the brain, deep within the brain, which deals with our emotions. It's basically our emotional center. And I'm just making this really simple. It's actually really complicated, but the limbic system, if we think about it as the CEO of our emotions, is a lot more interconnected than it is in the male brain. So that means that we're much more in tune with our emotions. So for example, you're walking down the road and you see a friend of yours and she looks very distracted and she turns her head away instead of greeting you. You'll go home as a woman, and I would too, and we'd ruminate on that. We think, what did we do wrong? Why is she cranky with us? Absolutely.
Why is she mad at me?
Yeah. You know, what's happened? But a male will go, oh, you know, if it was a male friend of his, you'll think, oh, you know, he had a bad day, whatever. I'll give him a call later. They perceive the world differently because they need to perceive the world differently because they're much more focused on goals and distance and things happening in the future and moving towards what they need. Whereas women, we are designed, or we evolved, or we were created, whichever anybody aligns with, to nurture our offspring and to nurture our community and to keep them close. So our emotions had to be very much more prominent in the way we live in our world. So that makes us more intuitive. It makes us more risk averse. It makes us just a little bit more sensitive to what's going on around us because that limbic system is just more active. And there's also more activity across the left and right hemisphere. So if you're having an argument with your partner and you'll go, do you remember on the 13th of February in 1994, you said this, and he'll go, what? So our memory center also is a little bit more active in the sense that we relate memories to our emotions in a different way to the way men do. So that's the third way we are different. Now, when stress comes along, Kelly, stress throws a spanner in the works on every single one of these levels, because from the psychosocial perspective, we don't think as clearly about the challenges we're facing, and we're not able to deal with them as clearly because of what the limbic system interconnectivity is doing from an emotional perspective and because of our hormones. So we've got three layers of complexity that impact how we deal with stress. And that, of course, makes us more vulnerable to stress and to the way we respond to this stress. So for example, in the last 2+ years, most people have been experiencing vast quantities of stress and overwhelm and uncertainty because the world is different to what it looked like prior to this pandemic.
That uncertainty, the fear. I mean, it's just, yeah.
Absolutely. So now it's challenged the way we perceive our role in the world. It's challenged the goals and the plans that we can make. On every single level, it's made us more uncertain. The challenge with the brain is that the longer uncertainty and overwhelm continues, which is related to chronic stress, the limbic system actually starts changing shape, and it becomes less capable of responding to emotions and responding to the environment positively. So we will experience more dips in mood, anxiety and depression rates go up simply because the brain and the limbic system specifically becomes less what we call emotionally capable of responding, of bouncing back. And this is where the challenge comes.
That rebuilding that resilience is so important. Yeah,
absolutely. It loses that resiliency. So a very important part of dealing with the way we feel is figuring out what our values are, because that drives our priorities. Mm-hmm. And then we can focus on the things that matter. So when I work with people, it's the first thing I ever do with them. We sit down and we go through a long list of what their values are. Because once we figured out what that is, we then get their psychosocial stress to reduce. Because then they're not trying to focus on 100 things at the same time. They're only focusing on maybe 50, if we're lucky, but less than they were before, because now they don't feel an overwhelming urge to juggle everything. They juggle only the things that have true value for them, and then that drives their priorities. Mm. So we need to deal with female stress in a very different way so that we don't end up feeling anxious and depressed because of the complexity of our own unique psychological and neurobiological and hormonal makeup.
So what would you suggest somebody listening do if they're, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people listening thinking, I'm definitely have more stress, and they're probably really resonating with what you're saying about the differences in our hormones and feeling the weight of the world. And then on top of it, everything that's going on. I mean, we don't even know if we can go to a party next week, let alone plan a vacation or see our loved ones. And you know, I was just talking to a friend yesterday and they had plans to go over to her brother's for Christmas. And then at the very last minute, oh, the boys were at a party and there were some people who now have COVID. They couldn't have Christmas. You know, I mean, they celebrated a week later, but yeah, you know, it's just
not the same.
It's not the same. And yeah, so I mean, people are dealing with all this. So what is something you said you have your clients help, you know, really focus on values. So somebody listening, what's something, just a couple things that they can do to, as women, deal with their stress, specifically as, you know, with respect to being a female and all that we, all the differences we have.
Well, I'll give you two tips here. And the first one is, and I do this with clients as well, I get them to take a piece of paper and divide it in half down the center. And on the left-hand side, they write down every single thing that is bothering them and that is concerning them. And if they need to go onto a second piece of paper, then they do that. And then they go through each of those items. And if they can control the thing that is bothering them, they then transfer it to the next column. And what happens once you've done that, you actually figure out the things that you can control and you can actually discard all the rest. And it's a very useful tool because it's a visual representation of what your brain's been busy with, but what you now can make it busy with. So that's the first thing that I suggest people do. And that's, it's a very
fantastic on so many levels, because that brain dump, just this act of getting something out of your brain on pen to paper really helps. And then, yeah, exactly. And this is something that I preach in my workshops and to clients. We focus on what you can control. That is, I think, I agree. That is one of the biggest, you know, tips to manage stress, to perceive it differently, because you're never going to be able to do anything about stuff you can't control. Yeah,
absolutely. And this is one of the things that it's bothering so many people at the moment, because so much of the things that are happening and a lot of the decisions that are being made don't seem to make sense.
Yes.
So the brain is always looking to make sense. So it's actually this meaning machine. It's looking.
And you're getting so much different. Like,
yes,
well, is that true, or is this complete opposite thing true?
Absolutely.
And it
makes it much harder for the brain, really, and that leads to a stress. So that, I like that little exercise. And then from there, there's the other exercises that one does with the things that you now know that you can control. But that's the first step. It is a wonderful step of clarity. And then I do have something that I actually created for myself when I felt that I was stressed, and I've taken all the research, you know, from my PhD on what works to reduce stress. And I made a little checklist for myself. And then I had a lot of women asking me, so what are you doing? How are you coping? And I said, okay, I'll turn it into a little gift. And so I do have a 7-point checklist, which also includes a checklist of what needs to be on your plate, because this is the next part of the discussion, Kelly, because what a lot of people don't realize is that stress is very expensive from a nutritional perspective. So when people have that heart racing and that feeling of overwhelm and that feeling of I'm not coping, and they have that anxiety, or they wake up at 1 and 2 in the morning and they can't go back to sleep, that's all because of adrenaline and cortisol production. Okay. So those are hormones and compounds that are being made in the body. But what a lot of people don't realize is that they actually cost. To be able to synthesize them, we need specific nutrients to make them. So when I do the presentation at your health summit, I'll actually bring up a slide and I'll show everybody all the nutrients that are required to make adrenaline. And, you know, when I do in-person presentations, which I haven't done for 2 years now, I have people in the audience sit back in their chair and they're really shocked, but then they understand, because then I explain to them that very many of those nutrients are also required to make energy. So then you can see them going, oh, 1 plus 1, when I'm really, really stressed, I don't have any energy. And that's why, because the nutrients aren't available to make energy. And I tell them why that is the case, because survival is more important than energy. So when you're being chased by a tiger, your body isn't going to say, well, I'm going to save a little bit because, you know, I'm going to need it for energy later in the day. It doesn't do that. It just puts all its focus on the adrenaline production to get you away from that tiger, and off you go. But the challenge in today's world is that that stress response of racing away from a tiger is only supposed to last for between 30 and 60 seconds. Now, let's just think about that for a moment. Within that time frame, you either escaped the tiger or you were eaten and you didn't need the stress response anymore. You know, either way, you were free and happy, or otherwise you didn't exist anymore. So that stress response was not designed to carry on week often, month often, right.
It
year.
Wasn't that chronic that we experience yes. now. Exactly. And
this is the problem. So all of that adrenaline and cortisol, which is the slow burn of chronic stress, all of that needs nutrients to be able to be synthesized. So we end up feeling exhausted, even though we're not doing that much, but simply because we've got this physiological response going on all the time. So making sure that our diet is optimal and better than optimal with specific dietary supplements, if required, is critically important to becoming stress resilient, because only when you have enough nutrients for both adrenaline and cortisol production and serotonin and GABA and acetylcholine and dopamine, only then can you feel capable of facing the challenges that we're facing. And I say this to people all the time, you cannot expect to feel capable if your physiology and your neurobiology cannot cope.
Exactly. It's so true. And I'm sure, I know I've felt that before, where it's like, you can almost feel like your nerves vibrating or something. And it's just, yes, exhausting. It's just, you're burning so much energy because your brain's burning so much energy, stressing out. It's so true. Wow. It's a powerful connection. Definitely.
One of the major problems that we have at the moment is that there's a lot of misinformation, but we don't know what the misinformation is. And that is causing a lot of people to be distressed.
So true.
I think, yeah, in the past we used to know, okay, look, this is absolute garbage and it can't be true. But because of the sophistication of our algorithms and because of people feeling polarized even before C19 arrived, it's been a lot easier for all the social media platforms and for media personalities to run a narrative that suits our particular perspective. And this is where it's really, really hard for people to separate the facts, because we don't know what the facts are, truth be known. And I think only in a couple of years' time, when we look back and we look at the data, we'll be able to have a better idea of actually how everything happened and how it unfolded. So that's the first aspect to this whole experience, is that we don't know what to believe in anymore. And it's exhausting trying to figure it out, because second point, the brain is always looking for a pattern. It's looking for a causation. It's looking for a reason. And so if it cannot find one, it has to make one. And that's one of the reasons that conspiracy theories have become so popular, because the brain is desperate for clarity. Without clarity, it feels as if it's in the dark, as if it's wandering around without any certainty and just having the sense of overwhelm. So that's the second thing. The third thing is that this lack of control and the lack of knowing what's coming and what to expect is also exhausting. And it's exhausting because human beings have, throughout history, had the capacity to make a plan and to see it through to a certain degree. Now, because of our very, very complex society, it's even harder to do that, because we have to take all these other rules, some of which seem ridiculous to a lot of people and some of which actually are ridiculous if you look at the data and the science, and try and make meaning of this. So it's a constant juggling act between what can I do, what can I plan, what can't I, what can I control, what does the future hold, what do my children's future look like? These are all things that keep on churning in the brain. So it's very, very difficult, specifically for the prefrontal cortex, to make sense of this. Now, just to clarify, the prefrontal cortex is basically the CEO of the brain. It's the part of the brain that allows us to think about consequences, to detect patterns, and to anticipate what could happen if we do X. Now, that part of the brain is working overtime, but there's a problem with the PFC. It is the most energy hungry part of the brain. So we are feeling exhausted and overwhelmed with this influx of information, because the prefrontal cortex runs out of energy faster than the rest of the brain. And it's constantly looking for making sense of the situation. So C19 stress is different to most of the stress that any of us have ever experienced before as a species. It's a new form of stress because of the complexity of technology, because of the complexity of the brain looking for meaning, and because of the complexity of the brain looking for control. So those three aspects combined have created a perfect storm of overwhelm and challenge for this really sophisticated but quite ancient organ that can't make sense of what's going on.
especially with such diverse information coming out. I mean, it's impossible to make any sense of it, because you hear this and then, well, that's debunked, and you hear that, and then that's, well, no, that's not true. And this, and then we'll do the, it's crazy. It's like, well, the vaccines are going to protect us. Oh, now everybody who's vaccinated is getting COVID. Well, now it's like, well, wait a minute. You told us this was going to happen, and now this is happening.
Absolutely.
So our brains, it's impossible. So I mean, it's like the C19 stress, the COVID 15 pounds everybody's gained.
Yes. And that's the reason, because that's something else that we didn't actually discuss, and we can talk about this more on the summit, is how being stressed leads to weight gain. Because a lot of people have said to me, look, I'm eating really well, I'm exercising as much as I can, but I'm still gaining weight, especially around my belly. And I say to them, look, this is why this happens, because there's actually a reason why stress forces us to gain weight. And we can dive into that. But really, if we just go back to first principles, and I speak about this a lot with my clients, let's forget about all the external things that are truly overwhelming. I'm in this too. I know what it feels like. I continuously have to say to myself, Delia, pull back, control what you can, ignore what you can't, and just focus on today, because today is the only thing that I have control over. What I do today, how I do it, tomorrow has to take care of itself. This is an unprecedented event in our history as a species. Never before have all these factors come together in this particular way. So we just have to brace ourselves and just be strong and just live one day at a time.
Oh, I think that's the best advice possible. At the end of every podcast, I always say, be present, live in the moment. And I really impress upon that I try to do it myself, because I never used to. And it just makes such a difference, because you cannot, that goes back to focusing on what you can control. No way can you control what's going on tomorrow or what happened yesterday. It's done.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's
right now.
Just focus on today and like one day at a time.
I'll leave you with a funny little quote. It's actually a quote by Churchill. And he said to somebody that asked him a question, he said, if you're going through hell, don't stop. So you just have to keep plodding along. And for a lot of people, this does feel like hell, but don't stop and check the scenery. Just move forward and know that we will come to the end of this.
Exactly. It's true. It's like, it's just a season. And like my mom used to say, this too will pass, and it will. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe, because now we are going, you know, on 2 years here, and it's,
yes,
but it will.
It absolutely will.
Live your life and find some joy, because so I'm excited. You guys definitely sign up for the summit. We can talk about, because that people don't realize, it's not calories in, calories out. The stress, there's a lot of things that play, and the stress plays such a huge role. So it'll be great to dive into that and how people, what people can do to facilitate weight loss by managing the stress in the right way. So that's going to be great. Well, thank
Absolutely.
You. That's fantastic. What a great conversation. And tell people about, they can download that free resource you have and where they can find you.
Absolutely. They can download that. I'll send you the link, Kelly, so you can put it on the show notes.
The show notes for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. And if people want to start eating to look after their brain, they absolutely can. And both of my books are available on Amazon.
Oh yeah.
They are available on Kindle and as tree books. And I encourage people to look at that, because once the brain is well nourished, everything else falls into place, and it's a lot easier to think clearly and make good decisions. And if ever there was a time that we need that, it's now.
Oh,
and
my
website's got a lot of interesting articles on them. They're very long. So if you're really a person who wants the science, that's where to go. And you can go and check out the details about things like chocolate and coffee and exercise and sleep. And I give hints in my blog post as well. So anybody is very welcome to go and see that as well.
Great. And we can link to your books as well.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And everything's going to be in the show notes. All right. You ready for my rapid fire questions? I like to end all my podcasts a little fun.
Absolutely.
So are you a dog person or a cat person?
A cat person.
Cat. All right. And you have cats, or are you a cat?
Got one cat. He's a very cranky cat. His name is Dexter. He doesn't really like human beings, but every now and again, he gives us a little bit of love. And so that's why our relationship works.
Speaking of Dexter, I've started sort of binge watching Dexter. Have you ever watched that?
I've watched a few episodes and then I never got into it. But I believe that it is quite addictive.
It is. And I kind of was the same way, like years ago. I mean, it started years ago, like in 2006, when my youngest was born. And then I just had always heard how good it was. And so I was like, okay, I'll start from the beginning. And now, of course, yes, I'm hooked. It's very good.
Well, maybe I should do that, because if my cat is called Dexter, it's worthwhile pursuing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Thank you.
And are you a morning person or a night person?
I'm a morning person. I get up and I face the day and I get going and I do a lot in the day. I think, yes, I am a morning person. Yeah.
All righty. And if you could just leave listeners with one little nugget, like your non-negotiable, the one thing that really moved the needle in your health and wellness journey, that's your sort of non-negotiable that you've carried through.
It's actually not a thing that I do. It's more of a mindset. Mm-hmm. And the mindset that I carry with myself is that our daily decisions do determine our destiny. I think people want to do one big thing and think that it's going to make a huge impact and, you know, change the trajectory of their lives. And I think there are things that can happen like that, but mostly it's our daily decisions that we do every day. So just being consistent, being patient, and being disciplined leads you to a place that you couldn't have imagined you would have been if yes. you hadn't just been consistent. And just every single day, it does matter.
It does. I think that's great advice. It's like that compounding effect.
Absolutely. Exponential growth happens yes. from building on top.
Right. Little things each the day, the end of the year can build, you know, lead to a magnificent goal. So that's so great. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you all for watching and listening, whether you're on YouTube or listening on a podcast app. I would be most appreciative if you took a quick minute to leave a rating and review, and definitely check the link for the show notes, sign up for the summit. We will be seeing you there shortly, soon, hopefully. I'm so excited for that. The last one was so fun, and I'm just so excited that's coming up. All right, you guys, stay healthy, be well, and be present.
Thank you, Kelly. It was lovely being here.
Thank you so much. See you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to the Clean Beauty Scene podcast. Be sure to subscribe and tune in again next week. For more news, tips, and recommendations on clean beauty, eco-friendly living, and wellness, join my free Facebook group, Savvy Girls Organic World, and visit kellybonanno.com for more resources. If you have questions or episode topic ideas, tag me on Instagram with hashtag Clean Beauty Scene Podcast. And talk clean to me, baby.